irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, Jim Potts back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday evening with me. Hey, today we're going to have a super topic, I think, because we're going to be talking about this issue of CCWs, and those are basically permits to be able to carry a concealed weapon. You know, I get a lot of conversation from people and questions all the time, and I've touched on it lightly on a couple of the shows here and there, and it's going to be a little bit more to today, so we can really just go through this. And you know, it's an issue that comes up because of all these different shootings, which we'll talk about. But before I go too far and jump into my emails, first I want to talk about two things. One is Veterans Day coming up, and you know, just want to shout out to all of those veterans out there that have, you know, made the sacrifices to help keep us safe, et cetera. Let's not forget them. So if there's a veteran in your life, be sure to send them a text, letting them know that you appreciated who they are. Give them a phone call, send them an email, whatever the case may be, because they are definitely people who do keep us safe and try to keep us safe on an international and also national front. So happy Veterans Day to all of those vets that are out there. Okay. I want to kind of mention about the borderline shooting. I've done a lot of training in Thousand Oaks, actually, and, you know, for different businesses. And it's really a shame about what happened. And I'll tell you something interesting is that Ventura County, which is where Thousand Oaks is, they actually do give out CCWs. But look at who the basic patrons were at that the event that night at the borderline. They were college students. I don't think they're thinking about CCWs. So there's a situation where there's a gap, so to speak, from that perspective. And one has to wonder whether or not if somebody there had had a weapon that they could have done something. And that's why I get calls and emails about these things and the emotional part of it. I got an email that I'll read to you. Jim, you have touched on civilians carrying guns and whether or not they should get their CCWs. Could you go more into detail on this? My husband is still convinced he should get a gun and carry it with or without a permit. I would really appreciate it. And signed by Iris. Well, that's why one of the reasons why I'm actually going to be talking about this today. So, Iris, hopefully you're listening and get your husband to sit down with you. So we're going to go through some things. And I got a feeling it's going to actually be this week and next week with all of the information that I have. But we'll see. Maybe we'll get it all done today. The second email says another senseless shooting. Jim, another senseless shooting, people at a bar, people having a good time. How can we anticipate these things? It seems impossible. I have been in your training right here in Thousand Oaks. You were right. Don't ever think it can't happen to you is what you told us. You were so right. Keep your message going, Jim. And that's signed by Paul. And it's true. You know, I try to tell people to understand that you can never think this can't happen to you. You have to be prepared when you're out there. Sometimes I know I sound like a broken record, but I am committed to, you know, instilling in people about the necessity of being aware of their surroundings, et cetera. You know, the FBI put out a report regarding the, hate to say, but the active shooter rampages are rising. And believe it or not, the number increased. Going back to 2016, it was 20, 30 in 2017. And my understanding is right now there's almost 50 mass shootings this year. People just don't hear about these things or they're not tuning into it, you know. And the news puts some of this information out, doesn't put some of the info, you know, and sometimes, in my opinion, the information is not always accurate. So, you know, we got to do the best we can with it. The increase in these shootings for this year, quite frankly, are very alarming. And, you know, this issue is going to keep coming up, and coming up is going to be the bottom line. So we just have to prepare the best we can. Look, if you have any questions or comments that you want to share with us today, the number is 818-602-4929. As usual, you can always email me at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. So, look, let's get into this a little bit. These numbers, like I said, are astounding about what's been happening right now and the increase in these numbers. And I will tell you something that most people probably don't realize, and that is how many active shooters of this situations that we've had since the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Believe it or not, here it is. October 27th, Memphis, Tennessee. Los Angeles, October 27th. October 30th, Springfield, Missouri. October 31st, Detroit. October 30th, Vallejo. November 3rd, Watertown, New York. And let's see here, Tallahassee, Florida on November 2nd. Then, of course, you know what happened at the Borderline restaurant. Now, you know, a lot of people don't even know that that many has taken place, you know, in this short amount of time since Pittsburgh. I get this information from different sources and everything, and some of it's actually televised, some of it's not. And I think that it's important for you to watch the news. I talk to people in trainings all the time, and I ask them, are you watching the news? Do you see these things? Well, no, I don't really like to watch the news. It's not a question anymore whether you like to watch the news or not. I think that you have to so that you're aware of some of these things that are going on, and it may help keep you focused. Now, they also have the FBI put out a report for the safest states, and I'll just run through the top eight safest states, believe it or not. Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, New Jersey, believe it or not, New Jersey. I couldn't believe that one is number four. Idaho, Connecticut, Virginia's number seven, and Rhode Island is number eight. Those are the safest states. The unsafest safe states, according to the FBI, New Mexico, Alaska. I couldn't believe Alaska. Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee. South Carolina is number six. I've got roots down that way with family. Alabama, Arizona, Oklahoma, and Missouri is number 10. And you know, when I look at New Mexico as being the number one unsafest state, that's just tough to believe. But there it is. Those are the numbers. Okay, let's talk about this thing about these CCWs. You know, the issue of CCWs, I mean, let's just start at the beginning for a moment. Concealed carry or carrying a concealed weapon is the practice of carrying a weapon in public, but in a manner that's concealed. And that's the basics. And we're going to go through the basics to educate our listeners today as well. Now, I'll tell you that in the United States, there's no federal law that addresses the issuance of concealed carry permits. Every state has laws that allow qualified individuals to carry concealed firearms in public. So we're not talking something on the federal level. We're talking on the state levels. So, of course, the questions that I always get is that, is it a right? You know, do we have a right to carry these guns? And there's a lot of confusion surrounding the carrying of weapons, you know, because of the wording in the Bill of Rights. So as a result of that, there's been a challenge to interpret what the bill really meant. But the basic point is this: individuals are allowed to carry firearms under the law. So keep that in mind. Now, again, I will emphasize that because the different states have different regulations and different levels of the consent to carry, we need to explore that a little bit. So if we talk about the pros and cons to a certain extent, I want to first mention that adults, you know, to carry a concealed weapon, 50 states do permit adults to carry a concealed handgun in public, all right? Now, in accordance to the concealed carry permit laws, now, I don't want you to get too excited about that with this statement because there are conditions. So let me just explain to you what it is. The first kind is a no issue. No issue. No issue prohibits citizens from carrying a concealed weapon. So even though the states permit these situations, like I'm telling you, just understand that there's four categories that your state may have in place, or maybe the county that you live in. So the first one, like I said, is no issue. Prohibits citizens from carrying a concealed handgun. Number two is a may issue. And that means that concealed carry permit may be granted upon the discretion of local authorities. So it's like with L.A. County. In L.A. County, the sheriff makes the determination who's going to get one, the sheriff's office, who's going to get one and who isn't going to get one. So the sheriff's office would be bombarded with these different requests, and then from there it goes to the Department of Justice, just to let you know, because I'm more familiar with that one because I was L.A. County Deputy Sheriff for all those years. The third one is a shall issue, and that will grant permits for as long as an applicant meets minimum requirements, no recent commitments to a mental institution, and no prior felony conviction. So again, we have three classifications so far: the no issue, the may issue, the shall issue, and then the fourth one is unrestricted carry, is when everyone can carry a concealed handgun without the need for permits, and some states actually do have that. So those are your four considerations. Now, among the four permits, the shall issue law has the most impact, as you can imagine that it would. And I'll just tell you that again. It grants permits for as long as the applicant meets minimum requirements, such as that they don't have a mentalist, they've never been in a mental institution, and no prior felony convictions. Now, this individual Long, who did the shooting at the Borderline restaurant, he, from what I understand, had a legal handgun. So he was able to get one, he applied for it, and he got it. So it goes back to the issue once again that people want to talk about with, you know, mental health being an issue. He was a former Marine, I believe it was. They say he was possibly suffering from post-traumatic syndrome, and there you have it. But when he walks into a gun shop, when they run the background check on him, if those things don't show up, end of story, they're going to be issued a gun. Now, I can tell you that most proponents of the right to carry believe that there's certain things that will deter criminals from attacking someone who's armed. So the proponents feel that if we have a gun, if a person has a gun, you know, and people are allowed to carry a little bit more openly and freely, then we'll have less crime. That's always what the argument is. And now they also claim that most of the adults who carry guns are responsible and law-abiding citizens. Well, if you guys want to call in on that one, you know, feel free, because I don't know about the response. I know people who have guns, and sometimes you have to worry about how responsible they are, but that's besides the point. Now, opponents, on the other hand, well, they say that granting permission to carry guns will only increase incidents of gun-related crimes and unintended injuries. And I don't disagree with the unintended injuries. I mean, those situations are out there. There's some statistics out there as well. But what are the odds that arguments would turn lethal when both parties are armed? And see, that to me is the key, because people tend to feel more aggressive when they have the guns on their persons as opposed to being smart enough to walk away, which is what I've spoken about before. So you can't just be in a situation where two people have guns and all of a sudden they get into some heated dispute. Neither one of them wants to walk away, and it becomes the Wild Wild West, so to speak, because everybody wants to pull out their guns and start shooting. Now, I will go through some list of pros, all right? So here comes some pros. And again, anybody that disagrees, I don't have a problem with that. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. Now, the pros to carrying a concealed weapon. Well, the number one is kind of like what I already told you, is to deter crime. Now, here we go about the Second Amendment. But under the Second Amendment, people are granted the right to keep and bear arms as a form of protection and crime deterrent. And it's also supported by statistics based on a number of analyses that have actually showed that there's a decrease in murders, rapes, and aggravated assaults when these situations are, you know, states have these laws, or these counties have these laws that people can carry guns. Now, in the states that allow concealed carry situations, there's an argument that their statistics are down. And, you know, again, it's always an argument to me because, again, who does the surveys and things of that nature? Now, the second one is that it creates a sense of security. And see, I think that's the issue that's going on for a lot of people right now. Creating a sense of security. People have enough of gun-toting criminals having an upper hand with weapons of their own. Citizens are going to be able to defend themselves and protect themselves, especially when going out at night and when working in crime-ridden areas. So therefore, from that perspective, you know, the advocates are always saying that, you know, they'd feel safer. It's a sense of security to be able to have this gun on their person. But as I've also said in the past, you have to be extremely careful with that. I mean, I've told you, I do this active shooter training. People ask me all the time, you know, about wanting to get a gun so that if something happens at their job that they can pull out this gun and start blasting at the person and shooting at people. Well, just understand that there's issues with that, and we're actually going to be talking about the civil liabilities and the criminal liabilities as we move through this segment, either this week or next week, depending on time factors. Now, women with concealed handguns will be able to protect their homes as well. And that's another issue. You know, I've been at a range with some of my buddies, and you see more and more women heading to the range now. They're out there. No doubt about it. They're practicing. So for women, this could be a key form. You hear about some of these women who get snatched, raped, kidnapped, et cetera. And I'm sure there's some women out there that are very proficient with handguns. So I'm certainly not leaving them out. So don't be sending me hate mail talking about, you know, about women. I'm saying there are women out there that are very proficient. When I was in the academy, there was women that were very proficient and a lot of guys that weren't proficient. So it's out there. Now, in cases where people can't always rely on the police for protection or prompt response, their own firearms will make an excellent substitute. So let's go ahead and take this call. Hi, this is Jim Potts. You're on the air with Jim Potts Live. Do you have a question or comment you'd like to make?
Yeah, I just didn't want to interrupt your broadcast, that's all.
No, it's not a problem. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm listening to you talking about the CCWs and everything else, and I don't know if you've covered it yet or not, or you're going to get to it, but people that get a CCW have to really understand it requires a lot of practice, and there's a huge responsibility to carrying it. Not just the responsibility itself, but even your lifestyle, your dress, everything is altered. And the criminal won't know you have it because any part of that gun showing or being silhouetted in your pocket or in your coat or anything else is considered brandishing and is against the law. So, I don't know. I just wanted to kind of...
Yeah, no, you know, look, California had a few... You're in California?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, they had a number of years ago now where brandishing a firearm, I think I mentioned this in one of the past shows, if you even brandish a firearm, because they were having them doing this on the freeways with these freeway shootings, and as a result of that, the law. Do you remember that?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, do you remember that when they had the issues about the freeway shooting?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
And as what happened was they turned around and passed that legislation that if you even get caught brandishing a weapon on the freeways in California, whatever. And, you know, to be honest with you, that cleared up a lot of that, you know. So stronger legislation in terms of what you do after you get it is a whole different ball game, you know. But for now, it seems like people are more concerned because of everything that's going on, and they just feel more secure, which is one of the points that I was making. Now, I will tell you, since you're on the air, that there was a third, and that is that it may stop, you know, this is the pro-advocates, is that it may stop public shooting spree. Now, that you know, basically their argument is, can you imagine how many lives would be spared if someone was able to shoot the gunman, you know, shoot a gunman down and be able to have them stop, you know, shooting the people inside? So, I mean, there's an argument for that. But again, let's just take the issue the other night. There's how many people in this place, 100 or 200 people? Where are
200,
you?
200, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, where would a person be positioned in there with that many people, you know, with that kind of crowd? And now here's a guy that's got a CCW to pull out his gun, you know, and to start shooting. I mean, it's mass hysteria and panic. I just don't see. Go ahead.
Yeah, you being a law enforcement officer, I'm sure you've had situations or know of them and everything else. And I did train with defensive gun classes and CCW. And one of the things we did was the instructor had us, we blocked our barrels, so there was obviously nothing in it. But when he would yell threat, and we were all milling around, like in a shopping mall, for example, and we'd pair up, and you're supposed to be able to draw down and shoot the person that's the threat. But you get a realistic point of view of, that's not easy. In fact, it's darn near impossible. That's what you're pointing out in this nightclub. Somebody with a CCW guy walks in. There's 200 people yelling and screaming and jumping around. It's difficult at best.
Well, here's what it also is. It's nice that they have those situations where people can practice, like in the course of a class that you were taking. But but you're waiting for him to yell, you know, a certain command, you know, for everybody to say, okay, now we got to get together and do this. in the actual live situations, it's not what happens. You know, and what triggers it is going to be obviously the person that's going to start. One guy the other night that was interviewed said that at first when he even heard the noise, he didn't even realize it was a gun. He thought there were balloons or something popping nearby at first. You know, so, you know, once again, the scenarios, in my opinion, are not that simple when you're actually in, you know, an active shooter event, because that adrenaline is going to start pumping. There's no doubt about it. And I'll be talking
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I'm going to be talking either later in this segment or in the next segment about the criminal responsibilities, but there's also the civil liability for it, too, because, again, in an environment like the other night, you pull out that gun and you start shooting and you hit somebody else as opposed to hitting the gunman. What do you think is going to happen at that point?
But even if you hit the gunman, there's still a possibility of being prosecuted. So that's, I mean, you might save the day, but your life is going to be in turmoil for some time.
Either way, that's exactly what's going to happen. You know, and it's not that simple. When I was in the academy, my wife told me, I came home one day and I told her, they taught us how to kill today because they teach us how to shoot center mass. And the story, and her comment was, well, didn't they show you, you know, couldn't you shoot them in the arm? Couldn't you shoot them in the leg?
Right.
So now here we go back to the gunman the other night. Okay, now here's a guy. Now, I don't even think he was wearing any protective vests or anything, but, you know, you go back to that situation. If you don't kill him and he knows that you shot him because you're close enough for them to do that and he's not dead, what do you think he's going to – and he's got a semi-automatic – well, let's see. I think he had a pistol. You know, they said it was a pistol.
Right, a Glock 45, yeah.
Yeah, you know, with an extended magazine or whatever the
magazine.
Case may be. Yeah.
Illegal, yeah.
Yeah, an illegal magazine on there. So the point of the story is that here, you know, you shot him. If you were able even to hit him the first time, you know, look at the police officer that lost his life rushing in there. I understand. Yeah. I think that he fired. And even with him firing, you know, he caught three or several, I shouldn't say, you know, multiple, I guess is what the information on the news. And there's a trained police officer coming into a situation.
Right.
You know, he definitely died a hero. There's no doubt about it. I know there was another officer with him with the highway patrol, I think. But, you know, these situations are not just that simple, to make a long story.
No, they're very fluid. And I think the main thing is if you want the responsibility of a CCW, really got to think long and hard of what that means. if you have to pull that out to save your life or the life of somebody else, it's a lot different than going to the range. And, I mean, I've been shooting for close to 60 years, and I gotta say, I thought it was a good shot, but in a panic situation and close up and personal, and it's an entirely different situation.
No doubt about it.
And I think a lot of guys, they get their gun and they think, well, I'm hot stuff, and they can wander around and whatnot, but not legally until you get that CCW. And even then, you know, you gotta avoid the ego issue and realize you're carrying the potential of killing somebody on your hip.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. I'm getting ready to continue with some of these.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take all your time.
No. Believe me when I tell you, I never really care about a caller calling in and spending some time with me. I understand that. So it's not really a problem at all. But I want to make sure.
Well, it's really nice to listen to what you have to say.
Well, no, I appreciate that. And I would still encourage other callers to call in if they have comments as well.
Certainly.
As well, because the line will still be open after this call ends, so that's not a problem. But I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Right. Bye. Okay. Well, again, I always appreciate people calling in and giving and expressing their opinion about this. This is a very emotional subject for people, and I appreciate every caller. Anybody else that wants to call in and make a comment, the number is 818-602-4929. So there's absolutely no problem at all. I gave you some of the pros. Let me take a moment and go through some of the cons. And again, that doesn't mean that people can't call in, because I don't mind stopping and continuing from where I left off. At any rate, one of the things that they say that the cons of carrying a concealed weapon is that increased crime. And it seems like it's kind of contradictory, but concealed carry can also lead to more crimes, they say, as much as it can deter them. So these are the advocates against. the studies out there that have shown that enactment of shall-issue laws increase the number of crimes. Why? Because they're getting these guns and people are doing things. You know, before the criminals had to get the guns illegally, but if you're a criminal and you've never been caught, then it's easier for you to be able to get a weapon, et cetera. Now, they've done these different studies, and one was based on aggravated assault, and it actually aggravated assaults actually increased. Why? Because these people have guns, they pull them out, you know, in a heated argument, and then that's a crime. It's an aggravated assault. You're pulling out a gun and pointing at somebody. Just because you don't pull the trigger doesn't mean anything. It's still a crime. You have to understand that. The second thing that the advocates that are against is that it turns confrontations to lethal incidents. Now, that's true, because why? People can't control their emotions. They get upset about these things. If you guys remember, there was a number of years back where it was in a movie theater. I don't know if you remember this or not, but there was a retired police officer. He got into a confrontation in a movie theater with another patron. I think it had to do with either talking or sitting down, whatever the case may be. No, I think it was actually text messaging. The person was text messaging. And the officer and this individual kind of got into it. And basically, the officer ended up shooting and killing this other person all because of an argument over text messaging. You know, and that's ridiculous. And they say that's only one situation that actually confirms that these kind of things can escalate very easily into lethal situations. So if you're going to have one, you still got to understand you got to stay in control of your emotions. So the advocates against are saying that, hey, people get into confrontations, it's going to lead to lethal situations. The third one that they talk about, it gives people easy access to firearms. And the people they're talking about specifically are dangerous people. Their argument is that the concealed carry law is only good if responsible and law-abiding citizens receive the permits. But again, how do you know? Here's this gentleman the other night, you know, Mr. Long. You know, he obviously applied for it and got it, was viewed as a responsible citizen because they did the background check on it, and he was able to get it. But what are the guarantees that such individuals will continue to abide by the law under all and any circumstances? And he's a prime example. Now, the advocates say the worst thing that can happen is when people with malicious and criminal intent are given the right to carry handguns. What's going to stop them from carrying out their plans? Well, you know, again, these are what the advocates against are saying, but the other side of the coin is they're still going to get guns if they have evil intent. There's guns that you can buy out there. The guns are illegal. People sell handguns and guns and things to each other. Now the home gets burglarized or the store gets burglarized, and all these illegal guns are out there. So, you know, to me, if somebody has evil plans, they're going to get it, no doubt about it. Now, plenty of states have seen how gun-related crimes involve individuals with concealed handguns permits. And Florida, they say, is one example where they, in fact, because of domestic violence, as an example, these people have these guns, and now they get into a domestic violence situation with their spouse or their live-in lover or whatever the case may be. And as a result of that, you know, somebody's pulling out a gun and shooting. I know there's some husbands out there that have taken their wives to the gun store first to buy guns and then taken them to the range. So it's not like those situations are just where guys might be shooting women. There's women out there that have shot men as well. I mean, it works both ways. Now, the advocates also say that giving people the right to carry a gun, that the criminals, you know, it encourages criminals to carry guns. Well, I think that's part of what we've been talking about. And we don't want to encourage criminals to carry guns, but the reality is that they will have the ability to get them if they want to be a criminal and they want to be able to commit a robbery, rob a bank, or whatever the case may be. They're going to get a gun. So I don't agree with the advocates on that. I don't think that changes anything. Now, the last one is that they say that as a non-carrying individual, how would a person feel knowing that other people in a bar or restaurant is armed? And it's what they're talking about is very simple. If you got a gun and you're in an environment where everybody can get a gun, how you're going to feel when you walk into these different places knowing that people are armed. So that sense of security that you had in one respect, you lose that sense of security when you know everybody in the place has a gun. Well, I don't know if I agree with that logic, but the reality is that, yeah, you know, any of those things are a possibility. But in the same token, maybe that might keep some of the stuff down if everybody knows everybody's got a gun. I don't know. But those are the simple pros and cons that people give for these things, and I don't think there's anything earth-shattering with this information. The advocates never want it because of the fact that they think that people are just going, everything's going to turn into Dodge City and the OK Corral versus, you know, the other ones that say, hey, I want to feel secure in my home. I want to feel secure when I'm out and about in the street. And, you know, how can you really stop me? Well, there's enough of a controversy here with this now simply because of the fact that there are, you know, 50 states, basically, that they do have these laws under certain conditions a person may be able to get one. So I gave you those four considerations at the beginning. So, you know, my advice is that if you want to get one, okay, you know, make sure you have a clean history before you go down there, you know, and that you don't have this so-called malicious intent. But how do you stop that? Because people's lives change. And I tell people that all the time. He's like this gentleman. This gentleman was able to get one. He's had issues. They said mental issues and the rest of that. But again, that stuff didn't show up. So you look at him in one respect, you know, you're selling this guy a gun. But his background cleared. It cleared enough for him to get one. Well, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to 100% safeguard some of this stuff like that. I really don't. But we got to do what we got to do, I guess, if we want to try to keep people safe. So if we need stricter laws, okay. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But you know what? We keep talking about the laws. So let's talk about the laws. All right? Now, this whole business about concealed carry legislation, you know, it's really not that old. It doesn't go back like, you know, 200 years or something. Because I'm going to tell you something. Until 1934, guns were unregulated in the United States. That was the year the National Firearms Act made it illegal to possess a machine gun. Now, think about those days back in 1934. So the 1930s, what do we have? We had the people like the Bonnies and Clydes and the Babyface Nelsons and all of those people running around robbing banks, and they were using those submachine guns. So I'm sure you've seen those movies in the past. So that's why they came out with the National Firearms Act, and it made it illegal to possess a machine gun. Unless a $200 excise tax was paid to the United States Treasury. Isn't that interesting? And it's interesting that Congress did not attempt to prohibit the possession, manufacture, or sale of machine guns, instead opting to discourage and thus limit their ownership through the federal government's taxing authority. That's how they tried to do it. And then the equivalent of $200 in 1934, by the way, do the math. That'd be $3,277 a day. So $3,277, they say, is what that would have been. So if we go back in time for a moment and we wanted this so-called machine gun or whatever, you would have had to pay $3,277 basically to the Treasury, to the U.S. Treasury, to be able to get that submachine gun. Now, you'd have to look at it and say, why did they do it that way? Well, because at that time, few people, including lawyers, judges, and legal scholars, questioned that the Second Amendment meant what it said about the right of people to keep and bear arms not being infringed upon. So they were simply, at that time, being introduced to the argument about the Second Degree Amendment. So this was new for them. So that's what the logic was. But now, that changed when the Gun Control Act of 1968. So remember, we're talking before, you know, back in the 1930, back in 1934, then in 1968, with the new law, it passed in the wake of the John and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King's assassinations. That's why it changed. Go back in time. Well, for those of you that were around at that time, 1968, the Kennedy assassinations, the Martin Luther King assassination, and now what do they try to do? Gun control. Now, to own a gun today, you have to be a United States citizen, people. Or a legal resident alien. Now, there are a list that they say flat out that there are people who are not going to be able to get a gun because of this. Now, the Gun Control Act, if you look it up, 1968, it specifically gives you the criteria about persons prohibited from owning firearms. And the first one is those convicted of felonies and certain misdemeanors, except where state law reinstates the rights or removes the disability, which means that the individual would be able to get it. Fugitives from justice, well, that one kind of always tickles me, because if they're fugitives from justice, I don't think they're going to be paying attention to the law, which is going to say that you can't have a gun. They're fugitives. They're already criminals. So what are they going to care about the Gun Control Act? Unlawful uses of certain depressant, narcotics, or stimulant drugs? Come on. These are drug addicts. They're not going to be paying attention to the law. But I know what they're saying. They're saying basically if you're a person that's had this addiction problem, and probably if it's recorded, et cetera, you would not be able to get it. Now, the next one was those adjudicated as mental defectives or incompetents, or those committed to any mental institution and currently suffering a dangerous mental illness. Well, okay. Once again, on the news, what do you hear all the time after a lot of these shootings? Mental illness, mental illness, mental illness. Did anybody know the person was mentally ill? Some people come out after the fact and want to talk about the fact that, yeah, well, that person was mentally ill. But where's that recorded? How does that stop a person from being able to get a gun? They don't walk into the DOJ and say, I'm mentally ill, don't give me a gun. It doesn't work that way. So that one to me is another useless one to a certain extent anyway. Non-United States citizens, unless permanently immigrating into the United States or in possession of hunting license legally issued in the U.S. So what does that mean? Hunters. So I can be somebody that goes, that I'm not a citizen, and now if they're going to be getting a hunting license, they can get a hunting license legally issued in the United States. They're saying non-U.S. citizens, though, unless permanently immigrating into the United States or in possession of a hunting license legally issued in the U.S. Okay? Then they say illegal aliens. Now, I don't want to get into the whole question about the immigration and what's going on right now and illegal aliens. Well, now is what we're talking about is that's a federal law. So some of these things, we've seen them on the news, where some of these individuals have committed crimes, they used a gun in a crime, you know, they're here illegally, so they weren't supposed to have one. It kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. People that want to get a gun are going to have access to getting guns, and that's the shame of the matter. Now, the next person who's not allowed to get a gun, according to the Act, is those who have renounced their United States citizenship. So they've renounced it. Okay, so I renounced my United States citizenship, so I'm no longer able to get a gun. Hey, did I have the gun before I renounced my citizenship? Because then, am I in lawful possession? I purchased it when I didn't, you know, before I renounced my citizenship. So I don't know. So there it is. So I don't know that I understand that one, because if I've already got a gun, I've already got a gun. Then they say minors. Minors are defined under the age of 18, with the exception of those in Vermont, eligible at the age of 16. So here we have a state situation in Vermont, and I think I already told you that's supposed to be one of the safest states, you know, that's listed. So why they specifically defined out Vermont, I might have to do a little research on that one, because I wasn't sure, quite frankly. Now, the next one, are persons convicted in any court of a misdemeanor crime of domestic violence. Now, that one I'm very familiar with, because as a police officer, you have situations where we have to respond to calls for domestic violence and the individuals are not supposed to have guns. Well, there are people out there that have killed police officers in domestic violence situations when they've come up to the door, etc. So I'm not sure they're paying attention to what the law is as well. And what are we talking about? What kind of guns? See, to me, that's a difference also. Are they talking about handguns? Are they talking about a hunting rifle? What are they talking about? Are they talking about a shotgun? It's certainly not a semi-automatic from that standpoint. And, you know, some of these guns, they have guns out there that are single-shot rifles, single-shot shotguns. You know, so are they saying that you can't have it that way either? Well, I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me from that perspective. And then they also say that persons under indictment for a crime punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year. Well, okay, so they're under indictment. Now, again, I'm not sure the process by which the gun stores, because mine was easy, obviously, because I was a police officer, so I went down there to buy mine. I didn't have too much of an issue. As a matter of fact, I didn't have any issue at all. My understanding is that they check with the Department of Justice, and I think now in California they check in California as well, because if the person has been convicted like of domestic violence or anything, that's definitely going to show up. So they're not allowed to have one. And I think that that's important, but again, these domestic violence situations sometimes, what happens to some of these individuals is not necessarily because of a gun. You know, there's people that physically abuse people also, so that's the other shame to it. So look, as long as you're not in one of the prohibited categories, you are federally eligible to own firearms in the United States and to apply for a concealed carry permit in most states. So again, that law I gave you was a federal law. The issuance of it is on a state-by-state basis. So as long as when they check with the Department of Justice, you don't fall into any of those categories I'm talking about, you federally would be eligible to apply for a right to carry permit. Secondary to that is whatever the state jurisdiction levels are in terms of do you qualify or not qualify. And again, I gave you the four different categories for that as well. So that's where you want to be careful. Now, this business about actually getting your permit, if you live in a state that's a shall issue state, it's easy. Find out the legal requirements for a concealed carry permit, meet them, apply for your permit, and enjoy your new concealed carry privileges. Now, shall issue states typically have eligibility requirements pertaining to age, residency, substance abuse history, criminal history. Now, felonies are an automatic disqualifier, I'm going to tell you right now, and so is the domestic violence convictions. Those are automatic. If you're in those situations, so age, residency, how long you've been in that jurisdiction, substance abuse history, whether or not that's a recorded situation, and criminal history that involves domestic violence, you could potentially not be eligible. Now, if you've been convicted before with firearm possession that you weren't supposed to be having, they're not going to give you another one. Now, the other side of that coin is the caller that called in before talked about training. Training and the legal use of force, self-defense laws, and marksmanship instruction, those are all part of your getting the permit. So even though you satisfy the other requirements, you still have to go through a training, which is not a bad thing because it gives people an opportunity to actually learn what they should be doing and not doing, and the safety of it as well. Now, the responsibility portion of this you have to take into consideration. To me, if you're a quick-tempered individual, you should not even be thinking about this, period, because it only takes once to make that mistake. You make it, you're done. You're going to jail. And I don't think necessarily that that's something that you want to do. Jail is no happy place, trust me, although there's people out there that seem like they don't mind going back because they keep committing some of these crimes. But I will tell you that a responsibly armed citizen is not a law enforcement officer with duty to deter crime or to seek out and apprehend criminals. Did you understand what I just told you? Just because you have that gun, that doesn't mean that you will be a police officer. You are not, okay? You have to go through certain training. You have to be sworn. And you should not approach it like you're going to save everybody. I saw something on the news not too long ago. There was a guy that had stabbed and killed his wife or his girlfriend, and he was confronted on the street because I guess where it took place was in a public place. So there was a gentleman that had a handgun and pulled a handgun, and this guy kept walking towards him, and he had his handgun on that person. And, you know, the guy kept advancing towards him. Now, he ended up not pulling the trigger or any of those kind of things. But you got to understand that when you're in an environment like that, it's not that simple to pull that trigger and to shoot somebody. Or you don't know all of the entire facts of the situation. You got to be cautious. All right? It's not the goal for you to get a CCW and become a police officer. You're not one. The goal is to defend innocent life.
your own life and the lives of those you love. So to me, keep it focused. If you've got an active shooter that's standing over you or getting ready to kill somebody right by you, you need to pull that out and shoot. I think that's the smart defensive thing that you have to do. You have no choice at that point. But just keep in mind, as a responsibly armed citizen, you know that guns should never be brandished without need. There are people that are out there that brandish these things sometimes because they think it's funny, they think it's a joke, and it's not. Or the fact that I have the ability to carry this weapon, that to me is not a responsible person, and they probably should not have it. So you understand that if you have it, it's not a toy, it's not a plaything. Just that simple. It is a dangerous weapon. And you need to understand that if you have it, you got to secure it. Because if somebody else gets a hold of your weapon, and it's a part of the responsibility, and they take a human life with it, you might be in trouble as well, possibly depending on the jurisdiction that you're in. Now, so don't ever brandish one out of humor. You know you will draw your gun only when you genuinely need to, and that if you do not need to use it, you will use it decisively and effectively and only as much as necessary. That's the critical aspect of being responsible. And again, I some of you have heard me say this in the past. I am not an advocate of civilians carrying these guns. But again, I get confronted so much with this, with questions about it. I want to make sure I'm giving you all of the information. And being a responsible citizen, that if you do get one, just understand, and we're not going to get to it today, but I'm going to be talking about some other pieces to this on the next segment, on the next show, with the criminal aspects of it, the civil penalty, things of that nature, and giving you a little bit more. Now, look, carrying a concealed weapon for self-defense, that is a citizen's most basic right and most awesome responsibility. If after careful consideration and study of this, you're not sure it's right for you, you should not do it. So look into this. I have my cousin back east that was talking about this about a month or so ago. And, same thing. She was concerned, she was thinking about getting one. She sent me an email telling me after I had spoken about it on one of the other shows and she had decided not to get it. And that's what I tell people, that look into this first. Go into the detail. Hey, look, maybe go down and even look at a gun. Because the other issue that comes up is what kind of gun do you buy? And some people want to buy these powerful guns like a .357 Magnum. And, it's like, that's too much gun. That's too much gun. Now, look, keep in mind, if you have a concealed carry permit, they're not also recognized everywhere. The federal government and all the states have places that do not allow firearms, much less concealed ones, regardless of the permits you have. The off-limit places usually include, but are not limited to, courtrooms, jails, police stations, school zones, and the sterile area of airports. Every jurisdiction has its rules. So just because you have one, understand that doesn't mean you can carry it everywhere. I can tell you that there was a big issue in New York City because New York City had announced, this is a number of years back, they don't care who you are. Just because you're a police officer from another jurisdiction, you can't bring firearms into New York City unless you are authorized under New York City. So you're a New York City police officer, basically, or possibly a New York State trooper, whatever the case may be. But these out-of-state jurisdictions, New York was like, no, you're not bringing your handguns into our city. So understand that if you actually are out and about, you have your right to carry, that might be limited to the jurisdiction that you're in. Now, there are some of these places that actually have where you can go and take these lessons, and you can actually get your permit for like 32 states all at once. You take this training, and you get the permit that allows you to carry in, I think, like 30 states or something like that. But still understand, within that state, it could be problematic because a local jurisdiction may not allow you to do it. So be careful about taking these things and thinking that you could just go anywhere that you want to, because it's not always that simple. Okay? So next week we're gonna continue with this, because I have some more information that I want to give you that's important as well. All right, you've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. Let's hear part two of this. I think you'll see some more exciting information in there. Hey, and you know what? If you like what you heard, spread the word. Until then, I want you to be aware, I want you to be vigilant, and I want you to be safe. Take care.